Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast.
There are some reaction videos that I did not get a chance to finish last time. Some long ones here. We watched this one. We watched Caleb, my man Caleb. We loved him. Let's see what this guy thinks about baby metal fans. There's a lot of response videos. I think that's cool. I'm happy about that. By the way, I haven't watched any of these. You know, when I share some of these on Twitter and stuff, and people think I'm lying when I say that I haven't watched these, I genuinely haven't. So these are my legitimate first response reactions to all these. Let's watch this video from Wyatt. This is a response to my trap metal video.
I have nothing against him, but a lot of his takes and viewpoints I felt like needed a second look and a second opinion on, because they felt really misguided. And surprisingly, a lot of you guys agreed with me with that video. I have nothing against him. I have no vendetta against the punk rock NBA, but it seems as if now the punk rock NBA is getting a little bit infamous, it seems, with the rest of the YouTube music community, because now I'm seeing even more and more responses from other people.
By the way, I think it's awesome when people make these, and even if they're super critical, like, that's exciting to me. I'm happy that I did anything that people care enough about to react to it to that extent. I hope I don't come across as butthurt. I think it's awesome that people make these.
It seems like his takes on a lot of things haven't really improved all that much. Trap metal and the future of metal. Before we even jump into the video, the title alone has already got me scratching my head and making me roll my eyes. Not because of trap metal. That's not the problem here. It's not like I'm this incel metal fan that's just like, ugh, trap music and metal music can't go together, me angry. That's not the problem. If anything, I think it's kind of cool that metal is just that expansive with its sound that you can blend two different worlds together with it, like trap music, and still make a cohesive sound that...
It seems reasonable so far. I have no issue with anything he said.
The real problem is the next part on it that says, the future of metal. That phrase and that question never fails to make me roll my eyes over and over again, because I've seen it countless times.
Well, that is exactly why I put it in the title of the video, because people like to rage click. So, sounds like that worked.
It seems like anything, whether it's an artist or a niche little subgenre, gets any type of extra success compared to what we're normally accustomed to within the realms of metal, people automatically jump the gun and go, future of metal. This is the future of metal. This is what's going to be the next big thing. It happened with metalcore. It happened with deathcore.
Both of which were the next big thing and sold lots and lots more records than any real metal band was selling at the time. So that was correct.
Any freaking time something new gets a little bit big, they automatically assume it's the future of metal.
I think my advice to him would be that he should maybe edit these videos a little bit more, because I think he's made this point already.
The future of metal is simply, it's always going to be a thing.
Well, that seems like a little bit of a reductive thing to say. What we are talking about in these articles is, you know, what is going to be popular in the future and why, and what is that going to look like? And maybe he thinks that people shouldn't have that conversation. If so, that seems like kind of a strange thing to me. Like, it seems, I don't know, people talk about that in every other kind of entertainment, right? Is Stranger Things the next big thing? Is, you know, cyberpunk going to be the next big thing? I mean, that's a normal thing to talk about in an entertainment, I guess. I'm not sure why that would be upsetting.
Judas Priest as a template for this, okay? They've been around since the 70s. That's 50 years they've been active. That's 50 years of influence on countless artists out there. The reason why metal will always have...
I'm not really sure I would agree that that's 50 years of influence. I could be wrong, but I don't think too many current artists are naming Judas Priest as an influence. I think that was what you heard in, like, you know, maybe Anthrax's generation, you know, in the early 80s.
It's one of the most reliable sounding genres out there. Imagine for 50 years, you have the sound of traditional heavy metal still being carried over, still as solid as when it started out. That's the reason why metal's always going to have a future, is it's just so reliable.
But those guys are, like, literally in their 70s now, right? Like, how much longer can they, maybe 60s? I don't know. Those dudes are old. No disrespect to them, but they can only keep playing for so long. And this is the point I've made many times, is like, where's the fresh blood? You know, when people consider Parkway Drive an up-and-coming new band, they've been a band for like 20 years. This is the problem.
In their point of view, the statement is the future of metal is what's going to be the next big thing that's going to help propel metal into the mainstream again.
Correct.
There's always these questions about how come bands like Cannibal Corpse and Emperor and Morbid Angel that have sold hundreds of thousands of copies, how come they've done it and all these new artists can't do that with an extreme metal? Because think about it. Look at the times we're in right now. Back then.
Yeah, but my point in the video is that a lot of these artists are getting millions and millions of streams. Like, Suicide Boys has more monthly listeners on Spotify than Slipknot does. That's my point in the video, is that this stuff is by far the most popular form of extreme music right now. And yet, you know, the metal community doesn't seem to embrace it. That's my point. And the question in the video is, why not? And is that going to change?
Thanks to the internet, there are endless amounts of artists to choose from out there. It's made it so accessible to discover all this underground hidden gems within just extreme metal alone, from Bandcamp and Spotify and YouTube and any other streaming services out there. It's kind of pulverizing to some degree.
That's very true, but again, my point is these artists are getting millions and millions of streams. So if the argument is that because of oversaturation, there's nothing new that can cut through the noise, the data shows that that's not true.
Agreed. Especially
because, you know, I'll hear people say that the next big thing in metal is like Tomb Mold or Blood Incantation, and then I go look these artists up and they have like 30,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. And I'm not putting that down or disrespecting that. 30,000 people is a lot, but, you know, compared to Scarlord or Suicide Boys with 2 or 8 million listeners, it's like not even in the, it's like several orders of magnitude off, right?
On a weekly basis, I'm discovering like 5 new artists, like, averagely. It's just fucking nuts. So personally, I really can't see any style.
I also think that's been the case for a long time. You know, even back in the MySpace days, I remember just being overwhelmed by how many new artists there were. So I don't think this is new.
Of metal from new or old being propelled into the mainstream nowadays, when there's just endless possibilities to choose from again, just extreme metal.
We'll skip ahead a bit.
He got tired with it. And how it kind of resembles how he got tired with extreme metal.
There were still tons of people doing trap metal, actually more than ever, but it all just kind of sounded the same to me. How much of it can you really listen to? It's basically the same issue that I have with a lot of extreme metal. By design, there's really no melody in the music. And once the shock value of like, holy shit, I can't believe they did that, wears off, it gets kind of tiring. And once you've heard one song in the genre, you kind of heard them all.
Finn. Literally, you could have just said, hey guys, I just look at the surface of extreme metal. I haven't dived in.
I have probably been listening to death metal longer than this person has been alive. I've been listening to death metal since like 1990.
Any more into it? I don't really know that much about it. And that could have been totally fine. But to just assume that all of it's just bland and the same, it's like, dude, we would have so much more respect if you just straight up said, hey, I don't know much about it, and then went from there.
I guess I don't really care, you know, if these people believe that I know about death metal or metal in general or not, because whatever. I mean, that's not it's not something that keeps me up at night. It says in the chat here, I wear shirts, you know, I wear cerebral incubation shirts, and I have like oppressor songs on my playlist and stuff. Like, I'm not a death metal tourist. I have a Morbid Angel tattoo. I've been listening to this stuff literally for 30 years. I don't really know what I could say that would make somebody like him believe that I actually listen to death metal. I don't know. I'm at a loss.
But it isn't until we get towards the end of the video that all of his points, a lot of his statements, just fall right apart. We'll start it off with the beginning of how he views the future of trap metal is the next big thing, which of course he always has to bring up the numbers with Spotify.
For example, the band Loathe, they have 159,000 listeners on Spotify. Scarlord literally has 10 times as many listeners as they do.
But careful everyone, don't want to talk down Spotify too much. And one of the guys that did a response video to the Punk Rock NBA a while back, I believe it's Stevic McKay, he did a...
I'm going to watch this one also. I hope it doesn't seem like I'm trying to dunk on this guy or that I'm upset or anything. I think this is a perfectly reasonable response video. I think it's awesome that he made this. I don't think he's being butthurt. You know, I obviously don't agree with him on all this, but I don't think he's being out of line at all here. And I think it's cool that he made this.
In that video, he states that the Punk Rock NBA blocked him on Instagram because of his remarks to Spotify.
I was motivated to make this video because...
Well... Yeah, this guy, like, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he was just kind of like ranting to me in like DMs about Spotify. And I don't remember exactly what he was saying, but I was like, you know what? Enough of this. I don't need to have somebody flooding my inbox with like this kind of angry stuff.
Finn McKenzie, you know, blocked me on Instagram because I told him he comes off like a bit of a cunt.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He called me a cunt. Yes, I'm going to block anybody who calls me names. Yes. Like, if you call me a cunt or an asshole or douchebag or anything else, I'm going to fucking block you. Yes. If that makes me, a pussy or whatever, that's fine. Like, I'm not going to allow people to flood me with verbal abuse. I don't have an obligation to do that. If somebody is in your DMs calling you a cunt, I think you should block them. Like, that's the sane thing to do if you care about your mental health.
He disses musicians raising issues about Spotify.
I've never called a musician a cunt, and I never will, because that's verbal abuse and I don't do that.
The reason why I bring up that he compares the numbers on Spotify to the metal bands, to the trap metal artists, is that he then states this about it.
There are just no new metal bands putting up those kind of numbers. That's just a fact. And yet metal fans are oftentimes super dismissive of this stuff and talk about it like it's just some passing fad. I mean, if tens of millions of people are listening to this stuff, then there's definitely something here. And that kind of like dismissive, arrogant thinking is exactly the kind of attitude that's made metal less and less relevant every year.
You do realize you're just expressing the fact that trap metal at this point is trending. I mean, for fuck's sake.
Well, yes, that's my point. That is exactly what I'm expressing.
Dude, don't you remember that you have a whole series called What Killed the Genre? And every single video, no matter which one you click on, it's basically done the exact same way. That there is a new genre, people like it.
Well, yeah, like it says in the chat here, death metal is trending at one point as well, in 1994, which is the whole point of that video. So anyway, we don't need to watch this whole thing. This is going to go on forever. But I think this is a fine video. Obviously we disagree on some things, but I think this is reasonable. Our baby metal fans, the toxic and mean. Punk Rock NBA thinks so. I don't know if maybe this person is ESL or maybe it's a typo in his video, but I like it. Our baby metal fans, the toxic and mean. And this channel is Mr. Deadman is the name of it.
When you give a critical opinion of a band that's really popular, that has a very active and passionate fan base, don't you expect them to react to your opinion?
I need to do this look in a video sometime. Ranting in the den with a poster of a tiger in the shades. I like it.
Is a sign that that's a very passionate fan base.
I made a video about baby metal where I don't think I was particularly critical of them. I said I didn't think their music was great. And I said that I'm pretty sure in the beginning they lip synced, which I think is true. Either way, I was not aware of the stan factor with baby metal. They came for me in the comments of that video. I got called a xenophobe. Lots of people said I hate Asian people, which, you know, is a little hard for me to believe since my wife is Asian. So safe to say I don't hate Asian people. I got everything in there, and which is fine. I'm not crying about it. I just had no idea that their fans were like that, which of course I should have, because it's the intersection of like metal and weeaboos, which so of course it is of course they're awful.
Okay, so you expressed your opinion. which fine, good, do that. You don't like BTS, but if the BTS fandom, if their BTS army comes at you, don't cry. You voiced that you don't like it. So these other people come out and say, hey, you're an idiot. You know, this doesn't have anything to do with BTS.
Well, I mean, that's not really the way that people should react. Like if you encounter somebody that says, I'm not really a big fan of this thing that you like, you shouldn't call them an idiot. That's not the grown up, emotionally mature way to handle disagreements.
Punk Rock MBA. I think his take on this is really stupid. He says that baby metal has a horrible or the worst mean fandom. He kicked a hornet's nest. He made fun of baby metal. He did a mild critique, which, okay, he did a mild critique. I'll give him that. He did a mild critique of...
I'm not crying about it. I'm just saying I didn't realize that... I didn't realize I was kicking a hornet's nest, but I definitely found out.
Of baby metal. But some things that were not completely accurate. And then, of course, what's going to happen is... Same thing that happens when you make a mild critique of a band or an e-celeb or a YouTuber is their fans are going to respond. They're going to react. They're going to say, hey, that's not accurate. Or they may call you names. Is that there's a couple of people that call you names. Does that really show like the rest of the fans?
So I think his argument here, you know, which is essentially the same one you hear all the time, is the not all blanks. Like people say this about, you know, black metal all the time. Well, yeah, I know you got some nasty comments, or I know that some, you know, black metal fans are racist, but not all black metal fans are like that. Not all baby metal fans are like that, which is true. You know, and of course you hear this in politics all the time. Is the overall group responsible for the actions of some subset of that group? And to some extent, you know, that's a valid question. The answer is, of course, no. Not every member of a group is responsible for the actions of some member of that group. But at what point do you accept that this is a pattern? What number would you need to see in order to acknowledge that perhaps this is a pattern and that that this is an issue? So if I get 5,000 racist comments, you know, on some video about rap, how many comments would you need to see in order to go, ew, geez, maybe that is a little bit of a problem? Or if I get 5,000 like hateful, ranty comments from baby metal fans, at what point would you say, all right, yeah, point taken, there is a little bit of a problem with that? It doesn't seem like there's a number that these people would ever acknowledge is, yeah, exactly. Oh, it's going to be 5,001. Checkmate. So I don't really buy this argument. It's a valid point. I mean, certainly you can't hold everyone responsible for the actions of some subset, but I don't think this is a valid rebuttal.
Behavior of the rest of the fans? No, not at all. Besides, what happens when you upset people who very much passionately love something? They're going to come after you.
Yes, and that's a problem. He's 100% right. I'm going to make a video about this. Maybe it might be my next video after next week about stan culture, because let's talk about this. Let's talk about stans. Let's work on this video together, because this is something I've been wanting to do here on Twitch. You know, write videos together, I guess you would say. What I do lots of times, you know, when I'm working on a video, is I'll put out a message on Twitter that I'm working on it, and the stuff that you guys tell me on there in my replies oftentimes makes it into the video, because you guys are smarter than me, and I like to take credit for ideas. So let's do that here. Let's talk about stan culture. I think what he is saying here is he's describing the behavior of stans and kind of just saying, what are you going to do? This is the way it is. Yeah, famous last words. Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to get it in the comments of that one.
That's their favorite thing. You just made fun of their favorite thing. Well, now they're going to come after you. Anyway, let him explain this.
I saw that one coming, but another group of very, very, very mean and very hateful fans that I did not see coming is baby.
Look at that. Very, very mean and very, very hateful. I have experienced a lot of love from baby metal fans. A lot of love. Okay.
Well, that's probably because you validated their existing beliefs. It's not hard to do that. When you validate people's beliefs, you know, that's what happens.
Holy shit, they are brutal. I had no idea that this was the case until I made that video.
Like I said, name any popular band, have any sort of criticism of that band, and you're going to have fans that come after you. That's going to happen.
I think you're right. Like Dove Emoji says, he's basically excusing the behavior, though. I mean, that's true. Yes, like he's just basically saying deal with it. So we'll skip this one.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode. The Punk Rock NBA, why you should listen to metal. I thought this guy said some dumb stuff, so I responded, I just wanted to show that he doesn't really know what he's talking about regarding metal music. If you've never listened to metal before, I'd recommend that you give it a chance. Let's see what he has to say. I'm not going to watch this whole thing, but one of my favorite death metal songs of all time, by the way, by Suffocation.
Trap metal. To me, this is a trendy new label for what I've come to understand as horrorcore plus screaming. There's probably some additional minutiae or nuance to differentiate the two, but as an outsider looking in, that's what I see. What I can say with much more certainty, though, is that trap metal is a hip-hop subgenre. Why then do we have a video here titled Trap Metal and the Future of Metal?
Well, I think that's incorrect. That's a thing that I saw a lot in the comments, and that's not really true. Hip-hop people do not have anything to do with like trap metal. Like rap fans don't even know this shit exists. They definitely don't listen to it. So trap metal is culturally a part of alternative music, not rap. That's just a fact.
Sounds like technical death metal in the future of country, or Nickelback in the future of hip hop.
Oh, well, I did a video about that too, actually. About Nickelback in the future of rap. Funny you should mention that.
Genre has no bearing on metal music, no relevance regarding the advancement of the metal genre, because they're not connected. They aren't stylistically related. So such a title is as ridiculous as tech death in the future of country.
But it wouldn't be weird if there was actually a bunch of tech death and country crossover artists, then it would be a perfectly sensible video to make.
And if you're asking yourself, what the hell is trap metal? What that refers to is artists that sound like this. Or this. And with trap metal, I feel like metal could be creative and relevant again in a way that it really hasn't been in at least like 10 or 15 years. But only if the fans and the quote unquote metal establishment will embrace it as the future.
By your own descriptions, this is not metal. Why then do you expect fans of metal to all of a sudden be into rap? Blending different genres can be fresh, absolutely. But why does it have to be trap metal? There's a plethora of other non-metal genres that could be just as reasonably considered for a musical cocktail. And by the way, an artist's t-shirt is not fucking relevant. I listen to a ton of metal bands. If I'm playing a black metal riff on my guitar, it doesn't magically become death metal or thrash metal if I'm wearing a Suffocation or a Sodom.
No, but if you're wearing a Sodom shirt, we could reasonably assume that you know and care about thrash metal and, you know, we're taking some influence from that genre, right? I'm exhausted by these guys. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I'm just tired of it. Let's watch some TikToks.
The following Thursday.
This guy, he got mad because I blocked him on Instagram. And the reason why is because I think he called me the word that starts with a C and rhymes with front. We were talking about this respectfully in DMs, and he was getting madder and madder. And I was like, all right, well, if you keep calling me names, I'm going to block you because I don't tolerate that. And I know that means something different in Australia, but I don't give a shit. He's not stupid. He knows what that means to an American. It's not cool. And I'm not going to tolerate people just like calling me names in my DMs. And if somebody's calling you names like that, it does not suggest that they have a great argument that they're about to lay on you. With that said, I have not watched this video. Maybe it is great, but I doubt it. But let's watch it and find out.
Welcome to episode 11 of... I'm wearing a hat because
I am a sad cap turd.
I can be a sad cap turd as well. I want to do a rebuttal video, a civil rebuttal to a YouTuber called Finn McKenty.
I am one of the only people on the internet with any kind of a following that criticizes metal.
So this video that I'm making is really for musicians and anyone interested to learn how much of their monthly Spotify subscription actually goes to the artists they're listening to, especially artists that aren't in that top tier like Drake or Taylor Swift. And to ask the question if there are any alternatives to the status quo, is there a different way to distribute royalties? The good news is yes, there is a different way, and it doesn't have to cost music fans any more than what we already pay.
I fucking hate it when people complain about Spotify.
Now,
only I'm allowed to pitch shift people to make fun of them.
I love streaming.
Can't use my own tricks on me.
I mean, like all business in the music business, historically musicians get taken advantage of, and I'm going to point out now that how that's happening in this video. When it comes to streaming services like Spotify, Finn has misdiagnosed the distributed royalty rate to artists as the market calibrated value of music.
This is actually not true. There is no per stream royalty rate. That does not exist. There is a total pool of royalties that are divided out among the artists on the system or the artists on the platform based on how many streams they get. They have an agreement with the labels, with all the rights holders, that they will pay out 65% of their revenue to the people on the platform. So the amount of money that goes to musicians depends on two things. There's a numerator and a denominator in this equation here. The numerator is the total amount of royalties, which is based on 65% of Spotify's revenue, which is based on how many subscribers they have and what their price is and all that kind of stuff. And then the denominator there is how many streams there were. And then you do the math from there.
So you've got two things. You've got supply here and you've got demand here. And where those two things meet in the middle, that is called the market clearing price or the equilibrium price. This is the price that the market has decided this thing is worth.
In Finn's XY axis, explaining the intersect between supply and demand determining price, I believe you've missed the point entirely that the market value of music to a consumer is between $10 and $15 a month for as much or as little music as that consumer chooses.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's right about that. But a concept in economics called revealed preference. You know, there's the famous Henry Ford quote, if I ask people what they want, you know, because he created the first like popular car. If I ask people what they want, they would have said a faster horse. The faster horse would have been their stated preference, because oftentimes what people think they want or say they want is different from what they actually want. Their revealed preference is that when he gave them the option to buy a car, they bought a car instead of a horse. If you ask people, would you pay more for sustainable, fair trade products? Lots of people will say yes. But in reality, the number of people willing to pay more for that product is a lot smaller than it actually is. So in this case, musicians, their stated preference, they're always saying that they want to get paid more, but their revealed preference is that they put their music on Spotify. So they have revealed that actually this is the market clearing price. By putting their money on Spotify or putting their music on Spotify, they may roll their eyes and complain and whine about it and say that it should be more. But at the end of the day, they have accepted this price. So it actually is the market clearing price. Spotify is a marketplace that connects the owners of music to people who want to listen to music. And so there's two prices here. There's two market clearing prices. There's one for consumers and there's one for producers. And those are going to be two different things. So he's right that from a consumer perspective, the market clearing price is $12 a month or whatever Spotify costs now. And then and both sides of that have accepted that this is the system. This is their stated preference, their revealed preference. This doesn't make sense. He's saying that that Pantera should get this $6.99, like that doesn't even make sense.
So this model is called the pro rata model, and there is an alternative model, and that is called the user-centric model. Spotify user just plays walk, Pantera gets $6.99.
Why? I am so confused why they would get $6.99 for playing walk once. Deanna said, I think he's implying that that's the only song they play the entire month. Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, so let's say that that's true.
There was a study with a huge sample size of 8 million streams across 10,000 tracks and almost 4,500 artists from digital media in Finland. It was co-authored by a whole swag of trade organizations, and the key finding was that Spotify's existing pro rata model pays 0.4% of Blockbuster artists 9.9% of subscriber money. When the users...
Why? I don't understand why... It sounds like he's saying this is a bad thing, but I don't understand why it would be. It is generally the case that in hits-driven businesses like entertainment, the top fraction of hits generates the vast majority of engagement and revenue. So this is the part he's not addressing here is what portion of plays. So it might be 0.4% of artists, but 0.4% of artists could very well account for 80% of streams, right? So that's the part he's leaving out here. It doesn't matter how many artists are out there. It matters how many streams they're getting.
Centric model was hypothetically applied that 0.4% Blockbuster artists would have gotten 5.6% of subscriber money.
I would like to see a spreadsheet here. Like this just sounds to me like somebody saying it's not fair because I don't think it's fair. I need to see a spreadsheet here in order to understand what he's even trying to say. This person in chat here says, Donnie, he's basically complaining that bigger artists get paid more money than smaller artists, which is how it should be. I mean, yeah, that is how it should be. I saw some article that was like, only 13,000 artists generate more than $50,000 a year based on Spotify royalties. And I was like, 13,000 people make 50 grand a year off Spotify? That sounds pretty fucking good to me. Yeah, why doesn't my band get paid the same as Halsey? A lot of these arguments to me just come down to it's not fair. I'm open to that idea, but who gets to define what fair is? Maybe Drake doesn't think it's fair that some fucking random death metal band who just got one play a week gets a disproportionate share of the Spotify royalties under this model. So I'm not convinced so far.
Argument comes from Spotify's own director of economics, who essentially said it would be too administratively hard to implement a user-centric model. So really, streaming service Deezer is rolling out a user-centric model next year in France.
I believe that, and look how popular Deezer is. It's not.
So it's not too hard for Deezer. I find it hard to take seriously when Spotify stands to benefit more from the status quo. You could say they're also contesting a court-ruled royalty rate increase for songwriters.
Of course songwriters are going to sue for a higher royalty rate, as they should. Everybody should negotiate for the most amount of money, the most money they can possibly get. So I'm not convinced, but like, of course songwriters are going to sue them. That doesn't mean that they have a valid argument necessarily.
Say parity for artists is not on their...
Spotify should try to make as much money off artists. Artists should try to make as much money as they can off of Spotify. Everybody should negotiate for as much money as they possibly can. That's competition and it's a good thing.
It seems to me to be convenient to say, we could do that, but it'll end up worse because we have to, like, change shit. And, we've got, like, 4,000 employees, and how are we going to pay our hipster bloggers and playlist curators if we have to, placate 99.6% of the artists generating the...
As I talked about on my last stream, I like to operate on first principles thinking. So what I would like to hear from him is, what is a definition of fair? It's not persuasive to me that there's 99.6% of artists on this platform that feel like they're not getting paid enough. Lots of people feel lots of things. That doesn't make me believe that their feelings are valid. Tell me why this isn't fair. I am certain that Drake probably generates more streams than like every random DIY bedroom project combined tenfold over. Why shouldn't he make more money? Yeah, exactly. So in the chat here, 99.6% of workers feel they don't make enough. Obviously, like, I mean, we all think we deserve a raise, right? I mean, and maybe you do. I'm not shitting on these musicians. I think it's totally valid to believe that you deserve more money, but you need to make a persuasive case as to why. And ultimately, I respect Taylor Swift because for years, she wouldn't put her shit on Spotify. So there's everyone saying that they don't believe that the royalty rates are fair and blah, 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 but they put their money on, they put their music on Spotify anyway. And the reason why is because Spotify helps greatly with discovery. Nobody talks about like getting placement on Apple Music or Deezer or Amazon. There's something like 400 or 200, whatever. There's hundreds of streaming music services. None of them really matter in terms of discovery other than Spotify. And so I think this is something people leave out all the time. The only reason that these random artists are getting any plays at all is because Spotify is very good at discovery, helps people find stuff. So I think that's oftentimes left out of this discussion. And I respect Taylor Swift because she said, I don't think these rates are fair. And by the way, fuck you. I'm not putting my music on Spotify. Cool. Like if you really don't think they're fair, you should pull your music. So I respect that she did that. Let's say somebody offered you a dollar to like push a wheelbarrow full of bricks across town. You tell them to fuck off, right? Like if you truly believe that it's a bad deal, don't take it.
Despite whatever platform changes are required, the user-centric model would prevent scams like stream farms, Google that shit, because you can never get...
I have heard the stream farms are a thing. I would imagine, you know, Spotify rather has a lot of smart engineers, so I would imagine that they are aware of that and, you know, have countermeasures in place, but I have heard that's a thing. I don't have much more to say about this. To me, it just boils down to somebody thinks that the system isn't fair and they have another policy that they believe is better and they're just saying Spotify should do this because that's just not how the world works. If you have a proposal that you want to make to somebody, you need to have some kind of leverage. For example, you know, if someone like Scooter Braun and say, you know, 20 of the other big time managers said that all their clients were going to pull their music from Spotify, if Spotify didn't, you know, renegotiate their agreement, then maybe something would happen. But you got to have leverage. So I don't know what to say, or at least a persuasive reason why this is better for their shareholders. You know, you could make the argument that at the end of the day, Spotify needs to keep artists happy and this will keep artists happier. And therefore, if you keep artists happy, then they're not going to jump ship and go to some other streaming service. And therefore, it's better for shareholders. Like the management of any company has a legal obligation. They have fiduciary responsibility to maximize shareholder value. That is their literal job. And if they don't do it, they're breaking the law. So it is not their job to look out for DIY musicians. It is not their job to look out for anybody other than their shareholders. That's just the way it is. So you need to frame anything you're saying to them in those terms, or it's just not going to be heard. This is just something to think about, you know, in your daily life. Generally speaking, my bosses have always said yes to my ideas because that's how I frame them. I frame them in terms of like, hey, boss, here's what I want to do. And here's why it's a good idea for the company. And generally speaking, they say, all right, that sounds like you've thought this through. Let's do it. That's the way you need to approach it with any of these things. And you know, for sure, these conversations have been had with people like this guy from BMG. Like the people sitting down at the table are very smart people with a lot of negotiating power. So he's not the first person to think of this. There's a reason why this hasn't gone through. I don't know what it is, but it's something that we don't know. So anyway, I could go on about this forever. But that's the way you got to think about these things is like anytime you're presenting an idea, ask yourself the question of what's in it for them, the person that you're presenting it to. They don't give a fuck what's in it for you. I mean, that's just the cold, hard truth is nobody cares about what's in it for you. You need to present any idea in terms of, hey, boss, here's what's in it for you. Here's why you should say yes to this. And if you can't answer that question, then you're probably just going to look stupid presenting the idea. So cold, hard truth. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you.
If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home, think about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.